Welcome to the Bodice Rippers Romance Novel Podcast, a podcast where we take a deep dive into the world of romance novels, looking not only at the nitty-gritty and sometimes steamy parts of romance novels, but we like to also look at the many different aspects that bring this genre together. We like to look at the authors and looking at their strengths and weaknesses, looking at the process of the authors, and also looking at the historical aspects of romance novels. We're a bunch of nerds, but it's going to be a lot of fun, so get ready.
Everyone, we're back with Bodice Rippers. This is our second to last episode.
Shut your face.
I can't believe it's already almost over. I'm like, so sad, but it's fine because we'll start back up in January. It's gonna be great.
We will. And like we were talking about this earlier in the week, and regardless if zero people hear this or, you know, 500 million, thank you very much, Joe Rogan, we're coming for you. I was just listening to Joe Rogan and Dave Chappelle's podcast episode.
We could be the women, the female, right? Joe Rogans.
I feel like this could be true. Yes.
We should have Joe Rogan on our podcast. Like, he has time for that shit. But like, you know what we should do? Is he married? We should have his wife on here.
Yes. Like, well, I believe he is. We could stalk him. He lives in Austin now because he left California because he was like, bye, bitches, you know, kind of thing.
That's right.
But we can always just stalk him and see, you know, the 1 million populace of that is Austin. We could just see, like, can we troll Joe Rogan, you
let's
know?
Just go and look at all the farmers markets and be like, who, I mean, sure, a picture of life is somewhere on the internet we can find, and we'll just
you know there is. But it was great because you and I were talking about this earlier in the week, and again, if nobody listens to us or 500 million people listen to us, like, this has just been the gift that has kept on giving. It's been so much fun for us to do. So I am very sad that this is our second to last, but also realize that, like, Christmas is my most favorite time of year. So it's going to be great December, and then January we'll be back.
Yep. Absolutely. And Thanksgiving is my Super Bowl. So
that's right.
I'm gearing up and preparing to make a big, huge scene for that. It's going to be very time consuming, especially this year, because I'm shifting all of our recipes to be more clean, be more organic-y, be more, you know, whatever. So I've got a lot of work ahead of me. So it's good that this is like our final wrap up, these two episodes. But it's definitely been a fun ride. So let's dig in. Today's episode topic is The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo. Yes?
Yes, it is.
By that Taylor Jenkins Reid?
Yes, we're coming hot with Taylor. Yep.
Okay. Perfect. And this one's interesting because I don't believe she has a series of anything. I don't think she has any kind of duologies or trilogies. But I've read three of her books. So I've read The Seven Husbands. I've read Malibu Rising, which is her most recent one. And I read Daisy Jones and the Six, and obsessed with all of them. Like, super, super, super love them all. I find her writing style to be very unique, because in all stories, the storyline is not linear. It bounces kind of all over the place.
So that's a common thread for her.
Yeah, for sure. And especially, I mean, Daisy Jones and the Six is weird because it's done like interview style. So that one's super unique. But as far as Evelyn Hugo goes, there is a little element of interview there. Like, that's woven into the story. So it is a very unique perspective and a unique way that someone does storytelling, is through this like interview style platform.
Well, and I love how I have a couple thoughts on her. So this is the first book I've read from Taylor Jenkins Reid. Mm-hmm. Literally finished it last night at 10 o'clock. I'm like, shit, got to talk about it tomorrow, you know, kind of thing. But I liked how she ended it, because spoiler alert, if you haven't read the book, stop right now. But how she ends it, in the sense of, yeah, it is that quick, like, article, you know, from the main character saying, hey, so this is what happened. This is after she, you know, has died, Evelyn. And then she's like, and here comes an excerpt from my book, which I thought was really interesting, because that actually should have been in the front, right? Like, that's the whole book. It's so it was very clever, I thought, how she did that, which was that interview style. And then she's like, and here we go, but you've already read, supposedly, you know, what this fictitious character has already written, right? But it takes you the whole book to get there. So I really enjoyed that piece of it. I struggled to get started with it, I'll be honest. Like, it took me a while to commit to the characters, to kind of root for the characters. And, you know, as is very evident from her writing, like, she makes them all very, very flawed, you know, which is right. One of the whole points. Yeah. Of the book, right, is how deeply flawed. And Evelyn Hugo at the end saying, you know, I would, if I had to do it again for the people that I love, I would do it over and over and over, and I'd probably be uglier and messier than I was. And I was like, that's so amazing. But like, it took me a while to root for them, right? And her writing style is a little bit, it was almost a little disjointed for me actually to like get going. So that was a little bit hard to like get into it. And then it probably honestly took me like half the book before I was like, okay, I'm committed. Had I not been reading it for this podcast, I don't know if I would have finished it, to be totally honest.
Yeah, it is definitely choppy. I'll definitely say it's not smooth for sure. And you do have to be paying attention because it bounces so much. You have to really know like, who is she talking about? Like, and there's a lot of characters. I feel like she shoves a lot of personalities into one book. So you really do have to kind of keep everyone straight mentally, you know, to know like who she's talking about. And I think I agree. I feel like if there is not somebody in a book where I instantly either identify with or feel attracted to, which might sound weird. I don't know if people are like, you know what I mean? But like, whatever. But if I don't have those two elements, and this goes too for shows, like TV shows or books or movies, any of those things like content that I'm reading, if I can't identify myself in the story or find someone that's attractive to me in whatever capacity, I'm kind of like, it's just okay. You know what I mean? Like, it's just kind of for me. I do also though really love when they tie things together at the end, like when it is that bit of a twist, like that is why. And I freaking talk about Night Circus like every damn episode, I swear to God.
Oh my God. People don't know that you love that as your all-time favorite book.
Obsessed. But every time I get to that very, very, very last page where it brings it back to where this boy starts telling a story and it's the story you just read. Like, I love that because it feels very Inception-y, right? Like, it feels very cerebral or whatever you want to call it. It feels like, oh, I just lived through this story that someone's just going to start telling now verbally. Like, I freaking love that. So I did love that element to it. But you're right. Like, I think those of us, unless you are really into old movies or old Hollywood, or if you're into Marilyn Monroe, you probably would really like identify with this, but that's not me. Like, I'm not super, I've seen some of those old classic, you know, Turner classic movies, whatever, but I am not super into it. So I can see where that would be hard. Now, Daisy Jones and the Six, it's basically feels like you're reading about Fleetwood Mac, and I'm obsessed with Fleetwood Mac. So I'm like all in, tell me all the things, but like, this was definitely harder for me to like identify. Cause I wasn't super into like Rita Hayworth or Marilyn Monroe's story or whatever, you know, it's like, they're great, whatever, but I'm not like ride or die fan, you know?
Well, and I think it's, yeah. And I agree with that. I think it's to her credit though. And I haven't read any of her other books, and I would have to sit with that if I wanted to, because I struggled with this one. Although I did love a couple of aspects about it, but it is to her credit. Cause you know, she's New York Times bestselling author, and she's not writing duologies or trilogies or series or anything like that. Like, she has these standalone books that have, I would assume, because you've read more than one, very different voices. You know, she's got a very different, so that's a massive credit, right? Because we've talked about this before, where an author tends to stay in the lane, right, of what their writing is or what their genre is, or they stay in the genre. But she's really, I think, from what I can tell, she's bounced around and she's writing from, yeah, multiple perspectives, different stories, different angles. And that's pretty rare.
Yeah.
I think, you know, to see. So I like that about her. I also love, and this, it probably actually would have been the best way to end this first season that we have on the show. But I love that she gives us 8 love stories, mm-hmm. right? I mean, well, actually like 10, because she, 11, you know, if you count her 7 husbands and you count Celia, and then you count her love basically in a weird way for, you know, the main character, why am I spacing, Monique, and then for Grace, right, who helps her. So like and I like what she said in the afterwards, where she's like, you know, I took this to my editor, who didn't even balk at like 7 husbands, like telling the story of 7 husbands.
Right.
But she gave this really, I was like, I was trying to think, I was like, what did she miss? Like in terms of like marriage or relationships with husbands kind of thing. I mean, the only one she really missed was a true sort of married to a man who was a true love for a very long time, had the kid, because that was with Harry, right? But otherwise she kind of hit all these different pieces throughout that. And I was like, that was really, it was really kind of heartbreaking, you know, to see, but also it was really interesting that she managed to kind of nail all these different types of marriages. And I think sort of that are very applicable, unfortunately and fortunately, for a lot of people, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I've only been in one marriage. I've only had one husband that I've had. Today's my anniversary. So I've been married for 14 years.
Yes.
And so definitely you read something like that and instantly like judgment light goes on, right? You think of like all those actresses in Hollywood that have had very public relationships that have all just gone straight to the trash can, that's used for just public entertainment, basically, which still goes on today, right? So you read like that title and you're like, well, this is going to be a shit show. But, and not that it's not, like, from an outside perspective, but if you go deeper and look at it, like, there really is nothing wrong with someone loving eight people the way that they wanted to love them. You know, it's like, why do we feel like as an outsider, we need to judge that and make that not okay? And it's not, it doesn't mean that it's like, I ever have to do that. I might be married to one person my whole life and that would be great, whatever. But it also is just so nice to see that other side in a way that's not judgmental. It's just more like, here's the explanation. Here is the actual story behind it. And you know that every single person that's been in that same situation where they've had three husbands, 10 husbands, whatever, that still applies to them as humans. They still have whatever flaws apply. It's still love stories for each of these people. They're still connections. They're still humans that are living life together and trying to make it work in whatever capacity. So it is cool to kind of see, even though this is a fiction, obviously, it does really make you think about those people. Like, I don't even know. I can't think of a person in Hollywood right now that's been married.
Well, think about Elizabeth Gilbert, right? Who has gone through a succession, right? So she was married to a man, divorced, and then she found another man, and then they divorced, and that was the Eat, Pray, Love, right? And then she found a woman who unfortunately, you know, passed a couple years ago, which was very, very tragic. Mm-hmm. And now I think she's back with men. What I love about that, though, and what she's done, not on purpose, but just who she is, right? And then what Taylor's writing about is, and I know this scares the shit out of some people, and I don't know, maybe it should, but like, you're saying basically goodbye to what has thought has forever been sort of that nuclear family, the conventional marriage between a man and a woman. And I'm like, thank God, like, that's like, because there's so much more expression that the human soul can give. So I think as soon as you're allowed to like take those constraints out of the way societally, it's like, okay, yeah, like, I'm the same way. Like, I've been with my husband for 11 years and I think that's going to be the plan. Like, there's no plan to change that, but like, he was married before, so he's on his second marriage. But like, I hope that all just blows open. It's like, you love who you love and you hope it lasts and you hope you treat each other well and with kindness and grace and all of that. But like, it doesn't sometimes. And then you love someone else, but like this whole, like, you got to stick with it for 45 fucking years. And well, I don't care if you're miserable or whatever, but like, that's what you're supposed to do. I think that's shattering. Right. And I think that does make people nervous, but also it shouldn't. Like, the rest of us are like, yes, like, thank you. Finally, it's about time, you know?
And I think out of all of the marriages that she has described, and even the relationships that weren't marriages, that piece with Harry, where it's a woman who, I mean, for all intents and purposes is gay, right? Like, you could throw that label on her, whatever, you know, she does have feelings for, you know, men at the same time, but she's held this feeling of being attracted to women kind of throughout the story. But you have this person, and then you have someone that's Harry, who is like, same thing, has always been very attracted to the opposite sex. And we are spoiler alerting this, but whatever, I don't care. I love that they can come together and have a really strong relationship and, you know, cohabitate in a place and raise a family together and all of that. Like, I love that storyline. I think that is one of my favorite things, is like, marriage doesn't have to look like what you think it does, like what your parents had, what your neighbors have, what anyone has. And there's no, like, we don't need to judge that either. Like, they can have whatever marriage they decide is important to them.
Yeah. And I think it depends, but culturally, I think that does look different, right? You know, and I know I have a friend of a friend who's like fully in an open marriage. It's her second open marriage, you know, and like, that works for them. And I'm like, you know what, if you come to the table with honesty and understanding and compassion and grace for what you each want, and you're both okay with that, and that requires that constant communication and check-in, are we still good? Are we not still good? Are things shifting? All that sort of stuff. It just doesn't have to look like what it's looked like for years and years and years. And it's going to be interesting too, because, you know, I don't know the statistics on it. You hear about it in the last 2 years about with COVID and all the divorce rates, like, you know, shooting through the roof kind of thing. I mean, I get it. There are moments when I looked at my husband and I was like, what is happening, you know, in the last 2 years. But it could be that's actually part of the shatter that's happening kind of worldwide. I mean, we're seeing systems being broken down that are going to need to be built, but like, you get to rebuild them. We get to rebuild them of our own choosing. And that's really, really exciting. Right. And so it's like, yeah, it's really terrible if you happen to get divorced in the last couple of years or ever. I mean, I saw my husband go through that process. It's heartbreaking and vulnerable and messy and ugly and all the things. But at the same time, he would be like, I wouldn't change a thing, you know, ever, because it led us to us, you know, kind of thing.
Right.
So that's going to be interesting to see, like, sort of in this new wave of what we look like as a generation for humankind, like, are we able to break down the barriers and the labels and the kind of very outdated programming that says marriage has to look like this and it should always look like this. And we're all saying, not really, actually. And we need to embrace this. And if you can't understand that, well, sorry, like we're moving forward, right?
And I love that. I think I wish that there were more stories like that for us to really dive into and listen to that is an actual like real life situation. Like these books are great with their fiction, you know, right. But I find it to be so fascinating. Like even people that are brave enough to come on and have like marriage podcasts with their spouse and talk about like real life problems and real life struggles that they've gone through and whatever. Like even we talked about this, I think before is that Goop documentary about sex, you know, and you have these couples talking about it. And I'm like, that literally makes my skin crawl off my bones. Like that would be so hard to have on national television, you talking about how you're not really into it, but your husband always wants to do it. They doesn't really put a lot of effort into it. So it's like this giant like thing that could be so judgmental and so charged with emotions and so like conflicting. And you're having not only the therapist witness it, but you're like kind of bearing that open and admitting it to the entire world, or at least the people that watch Netflix, which is also the entire world. So like I find that to be so brave, like so courageous. But like the more that we see those real life conversations versus these Instagram posts, like me and Brayden today will probably put a post on there, you know, about, oh, we've been married for 14 years. Da, da, da. And like, that's fine. Like, cool. It's not that I have to make my whole feed or everything about me and my husband all the time, but it would be nice instead of seeing the highlight reel to be like, hey, guess what? This year's been the hardest in our marriage of all time. Not only did we go through a freaking pandemic and get locked down into our homes, not only was it really stressful and hard in our own businesses and our own jobs and all of that, because this was so much unknown, there were so many things going on, but also our kids are becoming teenagers and we're having to grapple with questions and issues that we've never had to grapple with before. All at the same time of restrictions and judgments and mandates and uncertainty and all the things, right? Like this has been, it felt like Vietnam for marriage, but like we haven't had the platform to talk about that, you know, but you'll definitely see a, hey, we're at it, getting pizza tonight at our anniversary. So like the more that we do see those real conversations between real men and real women, and not even just these authors pretending to be men and writing from their perspective as best they can understand, I would love to read more and see more accounts of what actually does go into a marriage and what those can look like, because it will give you not only a peek behind the perfect curtain, quote unquote, but it also can give you inspiration of what you can shift your relationship to be and what is possible that you might not have ever even considered.
Well, and I love what you said, because that's exactly what I was thinking, where it's like, it's the conversation, right? So COVID's really isolated us. We all know that, right? So I've talked to so many people as recently as last night, having a conversation with a couple women where it was like, we're trying to rebuild, right? Rebuild the community, rebuild families, however that looks, right? But like just that kind of what we talked about, raising that vibration so everybody feels good, you know, across the world kind of thing. But I think it's become so isolated. We've talked about this before, you know, everyone's more and more insular, and that's not just the screen, but COVID sort of, you know, doubled that. But it's how do we start those conversations again? Because I would love to know real conversations about real marriages and be like, okay, so you struggled with that too, or like, that was weird, or oh, that's okay. Okay. So, because you know, like literally every thought you've ever had for the most part, unless you're like Einstein, somebody else has had, right? Somebody else has had the same goddamn thought. And you're like, okay, so I'm not crazy as it turns out, you know, kind of thing. And then it's like, yeah, guess what? My poop was yellow yesterday. And I'm really happy to hear that yours was yellow too, because now I know there's nothing wrong with my intestines. It's just what happens when you eat, I don't know, too much corn or what the fuck, you know, like it's just being able to find that common ground and be like, okay, so I'm not crazy. And I can stick my feet in the ground and somebody else has this same emotion, has the same feeling, you know, can have that same kind of conversation. I also think it's really interesting. So I was touring this new gym last night, and there's two gyms being built in the Valley that are climbing gyms. Mm-hmm. And I was talking to two of the owners, and they're two women and two sisters. And it was really interesting because the foundation, obviously they want to make strong climbers, have good fitness, you know, all that sort of stuff, but they are focused on family. They are so dialed in to making these gyms family friendly. Don't drop your kid off, come in with your kid and you guys both climb. There's options. They're doing food trucks and coffee trucks, and they have a bar upstairs, and they've got fire pits and like all this sort of stuff. And I was like, yes, that's what needs to happen, right? You have taken an old model, right? A fitness center, mm-hmm. and you have now overlaid a new model on top of it, which is the perspective is different, which is family, community, conversation, people who care about each other. And that's like such a 180 from EOS Fitness. It's like, come in, lift your weights, peace out, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Drop off your kids. So I was like, that's what I'm excited to see come out of COVID too. And relates back to this, right? Where it's like, people are looking for new and unique ways to connect and to communicate. And it's like, yes, that is a silver lining, you know, that's come out of this.
Yeah. And just new perspective, shifts in perspective. I mean, that is happening to us all the time. And that has been the great gift of COVID, is being able to see things from perspectives that you've never even heard of. And you can't consider until you've heard of it. And so even as you're describing it, like, that's what I think I love about this book, is it's this idea of endless possibilities and solutions to things that you think are barriers. Like, that's like the biggest thing. And she wrote this book, you know, obviously Evelyn Hugo in this book is an older woman. That's, I don't know when she wrote this. It's probably set in what, like 2000s or something, like 09. I don't know.
I think it's like 17. She said it like 17.
Oh, yeah. Perfect. So yeah, in 2017, she's obviously an older woman. So her life and all of these stories and all of these husbands, all of this has occurred clearly like in the 50s, 60s, 70s, all of these different decades that have had a radically different approach to life than obviously people in 2017 had, right? So you're going against all these things that the barriers that you would have, you know, been placed in front of you in the 60s as a woman who loves women is obviously going to be so much more apparent than in 2017, right? We can look at this perspective and be like, well, it's everyone's so accepting now of this. It seems so commonplace now, but that wasn't so in the 70s. But it's definitely interesting to see, like, no matter what, people are going to be themselves behind closed doors. Like, you can put whatever restrictions, you can put the paparazzi on your ass, you can put all the things, you can put fame, money, everything at stake. But at the end of the day, you're not going to ever change someone's mind about who they are, who they love, what they want to put their energy towards. Like, no matter what the barriers, it's always going to be crossed, right? It's always possible to cross them. So I loved that message too in this book of like, sure, things could look like they're not going to work out, or things could look like everyone's going to be mad or hate you. We're going to lose your job. You're going to lose the things. Like, there will always be a way. There's always a solution. There's always a different perspective you can take. And you can also do your part to shift the narrative as well, right? It's not even just that you have to pretend like you're someone you're not and do things behind closed doors, but you can actually take those steps to make radical change for the world if that's what you're passionate about. I think that's the biggest part.
No, I think that's, and it's so funny because that's actually what Joe Rogan, we could be Joe Rogan. Joe Rogan just said that to Dave Chappelle. You know, he's like, they were talking about how despite everything, and a lot of it's social media, because you can see instantly all the horrible things that happen in the world. He's like, you know, we are living in the safest time and, you know, less violence and all of that. And he's like, because, you know, every generation is better than the previous generation is what he was saying. And it's true in the sense of like, yeah, you couldn't be with a woman as a woman in the 50s. Like, you certainly couldn't as a man, which is Harry's, you know, story in all of this. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, 60 years later, it's, you know, nationwide, do what you want, you know, kind of thing. People might not still understand it, but you don't have to fear for your, I mean, I can't speak for the entire LGBTQ community, but like,
right.
Hopefully you're not fearing for your life like they were, you know, in the 50s in that sense.
And it's certainly better, right? Like, we don't know everyone's situation. We don't know everyone's reality, but we can certainly say that compared to the 60s, this is more open. This is more accepting. This is safer. Like, I think statistics just show that's true. You know what I mean? So yes, while, you know, if you're in an LGBTQ relationship, you might still feel that judgment or some sort of persecution in your day-to-day life. That's probably so for some people, but it's definitely not what it was in the 50s. It's definitely different. You know, we have a different reality. Wow, I feel like there was something that you brought up that I was totally going to bring up. Either way, this book, I did like it. I liked it a lot. Is it going to be my top favorite? No, but it definitely was entertaining for me. It was good. And I liked really how she kind of unfolded every single relationship.
Well, and you know, it's funny, right? And this is going to sound slightly terrible, but there's fiction and then there's fiction, right? So like, there's fiction that's like Zanetti style fiction where you're like, yes. And it's just easy. It's juicy and all that sort of stuff. And then there's elevated fiction in that sense. And she is definitely like elevated fiction. Like she takes it's not necessarily in the realm of the books that we've really read, you know, for this season. Right. It has a very different feel. even though I feel like she's a little disjointed and she's a little choppy, she's very eloquent. You know, it's an eloquent book and it's an eloquent love story and it's nuanced and it's sophisticated and all of that. And it's like, it's just a very different writing, you know, and expectation than when we're reading, you know, Zanetti or even Casey McQuiston, yep, for Red, White, and Wild Blue. I mean, there's hooks. It's like in music, right? In a song, there's always a hook, right? There's hooks that bring you in, and her hooks are a lot more subtle, right?
For sure. And the putting together of the threads, you know, the kind of weaving this common thread throughout the story does take a little bit of effort, I will say. It's not like as easy of a read as some of our other ones, but still, I think they're really good. As far as romance goes, what were your thoughts on that? For me, I feel like a lot of the relationships weren't as weren't as like steamy. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like you read something like Zanetti or Nora Roberts and it's like one woman, one man, we see their story, we see their relationship arc, which always is the same trope, right? It's like the woman kind of is a no, and then the guy is like a pursuer, and then it's like this big climax and they get together and then it's whatever. This is like, you see someone in these like very uncomfortable is not the right word, but it's like dispassionate relationship. So it felt, do you know what it is? It feels more like real life. So even Casey McQuiston, right? It's set more in this time zone, but it's so fantastical. Do you know what I mean? So all of these other things feel so fantastical. For her, this writing feels more like real life. And so it's more of a like, you know, not every relationship is going to be fucking fireworks. Sometimes you're just marrying your neighbor for convenience so you can get out of your parents' house. Like, how many people do you know that you grew up with that kind of did the same thing, right? Like, married right out of high school, the first person they found to just get the hell out of their parents' house and just start life. And then what? It's not a surprise 7 years later that they get divorced because, oh, weird. You really didn't build it on anything other than you just wanted to escape. You know what I mean? So I think that's what it is these romance pieces of these books, they range from super passionate because you can't really be together because it's super forbidden to like, we're marrying totally for of convenience because the studios think we would be a good pair, you know?
Yeah, no, and I think you're right. That's a really good point in terms of like the everyday, because for the most part, and this is why romance sells, right? It's because it's not the everyday, the sexual interchange and, you know, happenstances that occur are so overblown and so amazing and so wonderful. And like, you know, again, you know, we would not do these things in real life, but romance is escapism, right? That's a whole industry of escapism for most people. So there is that. So this was very tame, you know, in that sense. I would have loved to have seen more of the romance between her and Celia, like the actual sex between the two of them, because there were parts you're like, okay, we're getting, you know, we're getting there kind of thing.
Right.
But she couldn't write that, right? She would have totally broken her sort of voice throughout the entire book, which was that sort of dispassionate, you know, approach. I mean, and I found, and we can skip to this too. So my favorite character was Harry. Maybe yours was as well, but like, I found that relationship was actually the most lovely, right? And just the most like, not sexual, obviously, but the most love that was there. I know she loved Celia, but they spent so much time in angst and separation and all this, where it was like, that was truly a love story in my mind, where they were both trying to, they loved each other. They were trying to help each other with their, you know, positions kind of in society and their careers, all of that. They had a daughter together, all those sorts of things. So I really appreciated that. And there was no sex, right, with that. But that was, I would have liked more between her and Celia, more of that intimacy, but she couldn't do it. She couldn't write it because her whole book would have been thrown off because she just wrote that sort of real even keel sexual pace the entire time.
Right. Yeah, I agree. I loved Harry. He was my favorite character too. And it was just like the loveliest idea. Like, to be honest, if my husband got hit by a bus tomorrow, that is literally the kind of relationship I would like to have, is just like someone who's just like your literal, like, guardian angel. That's just there to just make your life easier. You know what I mean? Like, just loves you. And there's like no friction, you know, like that's a fantasy, obviously, but like, for real, it's like, you don't have to deal with all the dating. You don't have to deal with all the bullshit. It's like, who is like my best friend that I trust 100% that I don't ever have to worry about anything in that realm. You know what I mean? Like that whole storyline is so beautiful, and it's so not something that you would ever have anyone admit in real life, I feel like. But like, that'd be great to know people doing that. I love it.
Right. Well, and I liked to, because the twist at the end with her, you know, Monique's real dad, right? She gave it away too early in the sense of like her dad working on film sets. So you knew there was already a connection, even though it wasn't painted. So, but I was trying to figure it out the whole time, and I couldn't figure it out. And then I was like, okay, so is she like a daughter she gave away or whatever it was? So I couldn't quite get there. And then I appreciated when she finally did have the, and it was really clever, you know, how she intertwined Monique's dad and how he stepped into the story. So I did like that, but I wish she hadn't, she gave it away too early for me. Cause I was like, oh, so you know, they're connected, you know, it's going to be a thing. And she gets there halfway through the book too. She talks about, you know, that kind of thing too. But it was that same pace that she did, you know, with the each love story and, yeah, you know, the main love story kind of thing. No, I agree. It was, I got there eventually. It took me about halfway. I really enjoyed the last half, I think, of the book more so. But it's a different romance, you know, it's a different read for people who are listening. Like this is not Zanetti. This is not Nora Roberts. This is not really anybody we've talked about, you know, frequently. Again, there's different types of fiction, and this falls into that.
And I will say, the reason why we love, you and I love romance so much is that like, sexual tension, the frustration. And I will say that, Daisy Jones and the Six has way more. So it's like, you will love that. So I would say that one's my favorite, Daisy Jones and the Six, because there's more actual sex and there's more sexual tension. And the story is just really good. And the pacing is really interesting. The next one is Malibu Rising. I think that was good. It was set in the 80s. It's set with like a girl who grew up in LA that had to become a mom to all of her siblings, was discovered as like a surf model, and then marries this tennis star. They have this kind of, it's like right when that LA scene started to get real like fancy. So it's interesting that you see these people that were like born and raised in Malibu as like poor kids that now are like becoming famous. So it's like that shift of perception of this location. It's really tied into the location, and then it's like based around a party. So it's very cool how she writes it. So I'd say that's my second favorite, and this was my third. So I think out of all of them, we probably next season should read Daisy Jones and the Six at least, so we can kind of circle back and kind of touch base, because I think she's gotten better as she's gone.
Oh, I love that. Okay. Yeah, we can do that. We can revisit. I did not hate it. It's not like my top 10. So
totally.
Yeah.
Agreed. Perfect. Okay. So what do we have left? Is it just, what are we reading now? Okay, perfect. So I'll do one that I'm reading now, and then we'll talk about the other one in the next one. So this, I'm actually listening to an audio book, because that was the only thing that was available, of Women Who Run With Wolves. Oh. I've had so many people recommend it to me, and it's just okay. Like, I was surprised about how just okay it was. I thought it was going to be life-changing, and I'm like,
I've skimmed it before. Same thing. I had a lot of people recommend it to me, and then I was like, I'm good.
Yeah, I think it's written this is very similar to Four Agreements. I feel like it's written for people that have been raised in a more strict or patriarchal, is that even a word, or like Catholic background. You know what I mean? To where like all of this stuff is news. Like everything she's saying is like not news to me. I'm like, yeah, I know this. Like, I know we're supposed to be wild. Like, thanks for telling me over 3 hours. But like, I was not raised in a house where I was like held down by things, you know what I mean? Or held back. So like, this feels like, yeah, great. Like, this all sounds awesome. And maybe it'd be more impactful if someone had the opposite upbringing, but it was just okay for me.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it's good. Cause I've thought about it. I've skimmed it, but I've never really like, it's never caught me in any way. So
yeah, it's not new. It is what it is.
So right now I'm reading, evidently I'm just permanently stuck at the age of 17, possibly 15, depends on the day. Another one of my ones that I grew up with when I was a kid. So here's another YA one for you or your children. It's the Immortals series by Tamara Pierce. If you've never read her before.
What else does she write? I feel like I've read something.
Well, the first book in this series is called Wild Magic. And then there's four. And then she has numerous series. But suffice it to say, I am now in that series because it's just delightful. It's easy. It's quick read. And it's all about, it focuses on one main female girl. She starts at like 14 when she starts her journey through these four books, but there's a shit ton of magic she can speak to animals. She eventually can transform, and there's wizards and there's bad people. There's bad wizards. There's all sorts. There's love, there's friendship, all of it. So it's like perfect for your little YA soul that needs like nourishment, you know?
I swear, I feel like I've read something to hers, but none of these look familiar.
I haven't read all of hers. I've read most of her because she's got some spinoff series, but this by far is my favorite series that she's written.
Okay, so to go into this. You and your YA, you are so funny.
I know, I tell you, literally I'm just stuck as a sophomore in college or high school, which is like super awkward. So it's
okay. Not good. It's gonna be fine. Which one is the one that you're reading right now, you said?
So I just read the first one, Wild Magic. So that's the first one, in series. And then she's got three more. So great. They're just so fun. They're like they're like Crown Duel and Court Duel.
Right, which I actually just got. I'm so excited.
Yes, so good. So, so good.
All right, I got it in my place holds. I'm so excited. All right, guys, we're going to wrap up this episode, and we are doing our final episode next, so stay tuned and catch us in that episode.
See you guys. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of the Bodice Rippers Romance Novel Podcast. We are just so completely delighted that you guys are tuning in and listening to all things romance novel related, as well as all things in a completely different tangent. We're here for big conversations, small conversations that are on topic and off topic. Please, 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 if you have a second, just rate, review, subscribe, leave us a note, leave us a message. It just really helps us in the podcasting world, as we pretty much want to be doing this full time because we just love chatting about all things romance novels and talking with all of you guys. So if you have a quick second, let us know how we're doing. And of course, if you have any feedback, just pop us a review and let us know what we could do better, could do worse, or could do more in a hilarious fashion. And until next time, you guys, get out there, read those romance novels, and let us know what are your juiciest takeaways. Talk to you soon.